This is a Willets Point Shea Stadium bound 7 express train. The next and last stop is Willets Point Shea Stadium.
Yes, it is the Subway to Shea podcast. Anthony Rivera here with you, talking about all the news and happenings surrounding that team from Queens, the New York Mets, episode 123, live from the Subway to Shea studios in my office. Before we get started, huge shout out. Thank you to Mark Healy, who was my guest on the last episode. You can follow him and his takes on the New York Mets on X at Mark C. Healy. Also, check out his book, Gotham Baseball. It's a really good book, so you got to definitely check it out. We are live here. A lot has happened over the last 24 hours because the signing happened last night, and the Dodgers have signed Yoshinobu Yamamoto. He loves LA, and he wants to be in LA. And to break it all down with me and what is to come for the New York Mets, where they can pivot and what can plan B possibly be, is someone you should definitely be following. One of the top reporters and writers that cover the New York Mets, Will Salmon of The Athletic. Will, it's great to have you on again on the Subway to Shea podcast. I really appreciate you doing this. I know we had talked about doing it for Tuesday, but things opened up, and I feel like it's important that we get to this today since it's been a top crazy kind of day. How you doing, man?
Hey, Anthony, thanks for having me on. Doing pretty well. It's been busy, but I'm doing well overall, and I appreciate you having me on. I've been looking forward to chatting with you.
Yeah, and I'm kind of glad that this situation's over now, and I know you get a little break now for Christmas and the holidays, and hopefully, you know, it's a very relaxing time for you. I don't know where the Mets kind of go from here, and I know you wrote a lot about it, and I want to quickly go on. And some fans, you know, are frustrated with what happened over the last, 12 hours or so. But it's not due to Steve Cohen and not putting his hardest effort into trying to get Yamamoto to come to Queens. He gave it his all, right?
Yeah, I would think so. Based on what I've heard, I know Steve did an interview with Mike Puma of the New York Post as well, which I recommend people checking out, where Steve Cohen said, like, look, I left it all in the field. And that was something that I had heard from other people around the Mets orbit as I was reporting on the Yamamoto thing, to see just and get a sense of just what they were doing and how much they were pushing for this guy. He mattered a lot. He was at the tippy top of their list, and he didn't really have much company. He was their priority. They targeted him in free agency. He was the guy that they wanted to go after. He was special in this class because, one, his age, 25 years old, you do not usually see that in free agency. And secondly, they viewed him just the same way the other teams are viewing him, as an immediate frontline pitcher. So he was able to be different than some of these guys who are, 30, 31 years old, who they have some good characteristics about them, but they also have some things that make you take a step back and worry a little bit, just like any free agent. He was different because he would help them now, and he would also probably help them later as well. So it was a big deal. And yes, by all accounts, it did seem like they really targeted this guy and heavily pursued him and did kind of all they could to get him. Now, I know there's probably some pushback there a little bit with, like, oh, well, they could have just offered him X amount of money at the beginning and that would have been it. And yeah, of course, right? Like, you could have done that. But all along, I kind of figured, and people who know the Mets and who know Steve Cohen and how he operates basically told me, like, look, he's going to make probably the biggest offer, right? That was not going to be a surprise. But it's not going to be something where he's going to offer something that is, $100 million more than the market is or something like that. That just was never going to happen. So we learned a lot about the Mets through this process. And I think one takeaway is that this is probably going to be similar to how they will proceed when they do target somebody in the future, because it's not going to be just every single premier free agent that they're going to be after. It's going to be a more focused approach, from what I understand.
And I think we got to understand that what the Mets had offered, which was the 12 years, $325 million, we're talking about, you know, as much as he's young and 25, this is a pitcher who's never played in the major leagues. And you know, it could be a crapshoot. You don't know what you could get from him. Obviously, the upside is there, and we know what he could possibly become. But the Mets just, you know, kind of shelling out that much money shows you how much they were in on him. And the fact that he kind of went to the Dodgers, looked for them to match, and it was pretty much, you know, a done deal. He wasn't going to come back to the Mets. He really wanted to be out there in LA. He really wanted to play a winner. I've been talking about this over the last couple of weeks, and I want to know your thoughts of, you know, kind of, does the perception of the Mets kind of come into play here? You know, we're talking about the Yankees, their history, winning World Series, being the top team in the New York throughout a lot of years. And then you look at the Dodgers and their winning organization over the last couple of years, actually over the last, decade or so. They only have one World Series, but, you know, they've been winning. How big of a play was that in the Mets not getting Yamamoto? And is that something that the Mets should worry about? Because we all know that Cohen has the money. We saw him offer the deal. But is the perception something that should be concerning?
Yes and no, I think, because it goes back to, well, what does the player want? And sometimes we don't know that. Sometimes it's not as clear the beginning of the process or the middle of the process, and it's a little bit clearer toward the end. But I say yes and no, because with some guys, it maybe doesn't really matter that much. But if you're looking to be an organization that is trying to lure guys who are in their prime years, like a Yamamoto, and again, he's 25, he's different, but there may be somebody who's 28 or 29 and who's at the top of their game still in free agency that you're trying to lure. Those are the type of players that the Mets want to win. You know, not the 35, 36-year-old free agent who they could just outbid everybody for, blow everybody away for. No, you want to win the guys who are right there at, you know, your 1A type free agent, perhaps, right? Like this was. And so I think sometimes to do that, it's sort of a catch-22 situation where, like, you need those guys to win, and it's harder not to get those guys if you're not winning. But at the same time, if you're not winning, it's harder to get those guys, right? So it's difficult, and there's a balance there. But yeah, I think sometimes it could, because you have to demonstrate you are a competent organization with the right leadership as well. And it kind of goes beyond like wins and losses too. And you know, the Mets have had sort of a revolving door as far as their front office goes, right? So like they just got somebody in David Stearns who is viewed by his peers as one of the best executives in baseball. Well, this is his first year with the Mets. So he has to be here for a little bit longer in order to have that continuity and to have people know, like, okay, this is what the Mets are about. This is what they're demonstrated. This is what we know we're getting from this organization when we sign up here. I think Steve Cohen has done a pretty good job of saying to or having people say, like, okay, the Mets are going to take care of my player if I'm an agent, right? We've seen that with Edwin Diaz. We've seen that with Kodai Senga. We've seen that with other players that, you know, if they get injured or if they're making a transition or whatever the case is, right? Steve Cohen is going to do right by them, and he's going to be there, and he's going to take it, and he's going to handle it with class and all that good stuff. So they've demonstrated that much. I think the other part of it is, hey, you have to start winning games. You have to be a consistent winner year in, year out situation, and you have to have that front office continuity that it looks like they're about to have, but this is just year one.
And it looks like this may probably be the biggest acquisition is David Stearns this offseason, that he may be, you know, the big move that the Mets make. And obviously he has his team in place now, and for the most part doing his best in trying to make some of these minor moves that he's been making. What did you make of the trade that they did the day before with Milwaukee?
You know, I saw a lot of people saying it was a great move for the Mets and like the Brewers, what are they doing kind of thing. I kind of saw it from both sides, and I thought it was a pretty fair trade, actually, because when you look at it, say, I'll just go into Milwaukee's side for a quick moment. But when you look at their perspective, you know, Tyrone Taylor, Adrian Hauser, good players, solid, useful players. But on that roster, they're probably number 24, number 25, number 23, somewhere around that range, probably, right, is where they were on the Brewers roster. And so for them, they're a team that wants to save a little bit of money. So they have these guys who are in arbitration. So, okay, you trade them, you unload a little bit of salary. I know people are like looking at those numbers and they're like, whoa, like those are small numbers to be unloading. But that's the way life is for the Brewers. They operate in a small margin. And so like a couple million dollars here or there, that is a big deal for them. It's a different world based on their budget. So for the Mets, look, they needed those two spots. Like, we could say that they are maybe toward the bottom of the roster as far as players go. They're not necessarily going to change the way you view the New York Mets, of course, right? But they needed somebody who was a fourth, fifth, sixth starter type back-end pitcher. They got him in Adrian Hauser, and they got him at probably half the price that he would probably go for if he was a free agent. So you're saving a little bit of money there. And then with Tyrone Taylor, we had reported almost a month ago at this point, at least a few weeks ago, right at the start of, I believe it was the winter meetings, now that I think about it a little bit more, that they're in the market for like a defense type first outfielder, preferably somebody who bats from the right side. And Tyrone Taylor checks a couple of those boxes. And he's somebody that hasn't played a whole lot consistently. He became part of the Brewers outfield rotation a little bit, but never really was one of the guys out there. But he does a lot of things well. You know, he runs really well. He has a strong arm. He's a capable defender at all three spots. I think his some of his underlying data will indicate that he hits balls usually pretty hard and makes some solid contact. So there's a lot to like there when you're probably viewing him as maybe your third or fourth outfielder situation. Yeah, I like the trade. I think with Coleman Crowe, the prospect who went over to Milwaukee, you know, you're dealing somebody that I think the industry is a little bit low on. I think if he was not injured and if he had a larger sample size, we would see him a little bit higher up in the rankings. I know the Brewers like what they got in him, and they see him as somebody who, like I'm saying, is somebody that is a little bit better than I think the industry is giving him credit for, but he's not healthy right now. You know, he's coming back from the surgery. So all that to say, it was a pretty even trade. And I think that the Mets did well to shore up some areas in a smart and sort of cost-effective way that maybe allows them to do a little bit more in different areas.
With Taylor, does that take the Mets now out of going after, say, a Michael A. Taylor, who there's been a lot of talks about, maybe even a Kevin Kiermaier? Are they going to, you know, is this their outfield move, or do you feel like there's another move coming when it comes in terms of the outfield? Because the Mets talked a lot about run prevention. A lot of that talk came from David Stearns. And right now, as is with the outfield, if you look at it, I know McNeil is a competent outfielder. Obviously, the best one we have is Nimmo. We don't know what's up with Marte, if he's healthy or not. And you got DJ Stewart, who, you know, it's DJ Stewart. So, you know, can the Mets continue to improve with this outfield, or do you think that that will be the fourth outfielder in Tyrone Taylor, and that kind of takes them out of going after, say, like a Michael A. Taylor or Kiermaier?
We'll see. I think that with David Stearns, you can never rule out him getting another center fielder. You just can't, because he's one of those types of baseball executives who really value that spot. And so you can't just scratch it, cross it out, and be like, okay, that's done. Now, would it make sense for them to get somebody like a Michael A. Taylor? It makes less sense now because of Tyrone Taylor's presence on the roster, because they essentially do a little bit of the same thing. Although Michael A. Taylor, of course, has a longer track record, and, you know, he's a Gold Glover, that kind of thing. A little bit more expensive, of course, as well in free agency. All that to say, like, you can't probably... I wouldn't rule it out, but this, if anything, opens the door for them to maybe look a little bit toward somebody who's a little bit more offense first in the outfield, if they do that. Or they could do something like grab somebody who plays a little bit of a few different positions, like a little bit of outfield and maybe a little bit third base or first base, whatever it is. That kind of fits a little bit of a couple of needs or that kind of thing. So long story short, they could do a lot of things here still, and I wouldn't necessarily rule out anything. And I don't think that because they got Tyrone Taylor, that X player should be completely ruled out of the conversation. To kind of get back to the guys that you mentioned, yeah, I think it's a little bit less likely. And like I said, I think it opens the door a little bit to see if they want to get somebody who's a little bit more offensive oriented.
Now going to Hauser, he kind of slips in now into that fourth or fifth role, like you mentioned, earlier. Mets still need pitching, even without Yamamoto. I even thought, even if they signed Yamamoto, they still needed probably about one more starting pitcher. Now, I don't know if they go out and get two. I don't know if they just go with one, but I know you mentioned in your articles that, you know, they are not going to overspend for someone like Blake Snell or Jordan Montgomery. Kind of could possibly be somewhat of a trap contract given the situation. But where do you see them? There has really not been much talk of anything else except for Yamamoto over the last, 25, 26 days, where can you see the Met pivot? Because they at least need one more starting pitcher.
Sure. Yeah. And I think that, like, we have seen maybe some instances where somebody will say, like, oh, they checked in on so-and-so and they checked in on this guy. Yep. Yeah, they checked in on him. But for the Mets, that may not mean necessarily that they are interested or that they were close to offering or really anything like that. That can mean a whole lot of different things. And one thing it could mean sometimes, especially in this context, is they were checking in on somebody just to see if their price went down a little bit or to kind of get a read on the market just to do their homework, because they're going to check in on everybody just to see, right? Like, that's just the way it is. You get your information that way by checking. So I wouldn't read too much into that just yet. If you do see a report of, oh, hey, they checked in on this guy or that guy, until we know that there's like significant interest behind that, like what is behind them checking him. So that said, yes, Anthony, like you said, I don't anticipate them pivoting to just next best available pitcher like they would maybe like last year, right? If they didn't sign Justin Verlander, I'm pretty confident they would have tried to get Carlos Rodon for that matter. That's just the way it was last year. They were going to just go down the list and be like, okay, this guy's next. We're trying to go all in here and win a World Series or something. It's just things are different this year. It's, like I said, a more focused approach. We could go back and forth on whether it's good, bad, whatever. I just know that this is what to expect. So that said, I would look for guys who are more on that 1 or 2 year deal situation for the Mets, because like you said, like, we haven't heard them interested in, whether it's Snell or whoever else. So I would go a little bit further down the list, and even somebody like a Lucas Giolito may be a little bit out of their preferred range. So you look a little bit lower than that.
So are we talking about like the Lorenzans of the world?
I think so. Yeah. And even those guys in this market, though, I wouldn't be surprised if they fetched themselves 2 or 3 year deals themselves because of the way that this market has unfolded. And so those are also things to look out for. I wouldn't, the Adrian Hauser trade didn't really surprise me, but that's an example of them looking beyond the free agency group and targeting somebody that filled up what they were looking for in a different way. But yeah, as far as free agents go, I would imagine it's more of a 1 to 2 year guy, that sort of thing that they're looking for. And that's here ideally. Could they stretch it a little bit if they wanted to? Yeah. I haven't heard them interested in any way to that extent yet, but that could change, right? As the focus shifts away from Yamamoto onto other things.
Now, I know Senga, they had to kind of carry him along at the beginning of last season, kind of implement somewhat of a six-man rotation as much as they could, considering all the injuries that, the rotation was dealt last year. Is that something we could see again at the start of this season as well? Or is he, full on, full board, full steam ahead right from the start? Because as of right now, he's basically the ace of the staff.
Yes, I think that in his mind, he would probably prefer to just go on regular rest, actually. If it was totally up to him or whatever, I think part of him probably, I don't want to speak for the guy, but just in interviews before and getting to know him a little bit through that, I think that he would look at it as a challenge of like, okay, I can do this. I could prove to you that I could pitch on regular rest. This is what I thought I would have to do anyway coming over here, even though you guys have helped me and accommodated me and all that type of good stuff. That said, a lot of teams are utilizing six-man rotations, whether they're having a pitcher come from Japan or whatever the case is. It's just that's sort of the way of the game right now, where we see that a lot, where teams are utilizing longer rotations, more guys. And given the fact that the Mets also have Luis Severino coming back from a season where he wasn't, giving them 30 starts, the Yankees or anything like that. He had some injuries, particularly one down toward the end of the season. So we'll see. There's other reasons that you'd want to run a six-man rotation, I think. And sometimes that's, you could get away with not doing it based on where you are in the calendar and the days off. And I don't know what it looks like in, say, April, May off the top of my head. But those are things that I think you have to bake into the equation. And so as far as how that relates to their offseason and what they do, I think that they need probably, like we were talking about, at least one, maybe two more starting pitchers just to feel better about your situation, because you don't have it, even David Peterson for a little while as well. and he was expected to be somebody that, you know, entered the year competing for a final spot in the rotation, maybe even getting one. He showed some good signs in like late August, September. You're not going to have him for a while, so you're left with Tyler McGill, who also showed some good signs late. You know, Joey Lucchese, Jose Buto, guys like that competing for internally at least, in addition to whoever else you pick up.
Yeah, I was wondering how much more important now do those guys become the Jose Butos, the Tyler McGills, and Joey Lucchese as well? Because, you know, as much as probably Met fans don't want to hear, they are now a very important part of this depth of starting pitchers and maybe long relievers, and probably could come out of the bullpen as well. Those guys become very important to, you know, how I guess David Stearns figures out the way they handle the rest of this offseason.
Yeah, no, they're important, right? Like they're going to serve a role. And I think even David Stearns said about Adrian Hauser in a press release that he put out. By the way, I think it's always a little bit interesting to look at what David Stearns says. I know that sometimes like those press releases can be a little bit canned and it's kind of like throwaway quotes, whatever. But, you know, David Stearns, for the most part, will actually give you a little bit of like, okay, this is what they're thinking a little bit here. It's not just a waste of time, this quote. This is actually kind of useful. And with Adrian Hauser, he even says like, hey, he's going to pitch some innings for us. He's going to pitch valuable innings. And I think that kind of demonstrates like how they feel about it. And that, yes, they are looking to somebody like Adrian Hauser because you sort of know what you're getting from somebody like that, right? If you, I covered him when I covered the Brewers. He's going to give you four, five, six innings. He's going to give up a few runs. He's going to throw a lot of sinkers, whatever. You know, he's going to pitch. He's going to do what he's going to do, and he's going to do it every single time he takes the ball, pretty much. You know what you're getting. There's a little bit of value in that. I think the same could be said with some of these other guys, where, like, yes, you're not expecting quality start necessarily, but, you know, they're going to give you a competent option at the major league level, and you need probably, you know, at least 8 to 10 at least, and probably more over the course of a 162 game season. So yeah, I think they serve a role. How many starts that these guys will get remains to be seen, right? And it kind of depends on who else they bring in externally, but without a doubt, like, this is a team that the Mets, you know, they're not, and this is maybe is goes back to the Yamamoto thing and a lot of other things in the big picture, but, you know, their prospects are just not ready to perform at the major league level yet as far as starting pitchers go. And even when they are, they're probably number threes. I think most rival evaluators will say that, like, hey, this guy's a number three guy, maybe a number two, but probably number three kind of guy. So that's where the Mets are at pitching wise. They don't really have like these elite guys coming through their system that are can't miss, or who you're just chomping at the bit to place in your rotation as a number one in a year or so. They're interesting prospects. There's a lot to like about them, but they're not necessarily ready to help you in April. And when they do, it's probably going to take a little bit of time for them to find themselves at the major league level anyway.
Let's say the Mets get, you know, one starter through free agency or maybe even another trade. The Mets should definitely continue to look for bullpen help as well. I know they've been picking up these little pieces, whether they're like minor deals or even the Jorge Lopez deal. I have a comment here, and I'm going to get to some of the comments as well. Said bullpen needs some pieces. I believe Matt Moore, Phil Maton are two arms that could be pretty good for a low cost. Where do you see the Mets right now? You know, are they handling the bullpen the same way they are kind of looking at the rest of the offseason with free agents? Are they going to handle it the same way that with the starting pitching as well?
My understanding from just talking with people, having some conversations, I would imagine that the Mets will continue to kind of go the route that they've been going so far. And that doesn't rule them out from making a bigger signing for the bullpen. That's a possibility. Somebody like a more established, maybe eighth inning guy in a traditional sense. That's kind of what I'm getting at there by saying bigger signing. But I wouldn't necessarily also put my name next to that and say it's happening. But if it does happen, I would suggest that it comes later and it comes after they take care of some other priorities first. And as far as that question goes that mentioned, you know, Phil Maton, whoever else, you know, those guys actually may be a little bit more expensive than you think. especially in the case of Maton, who probably will command the multi-year deal as a reliever. You know, this is somebody who's a little bit younger than some of these other relievers, so he may be a little bit more expensive than you think, and he's pretty good. So he's up there. I like him a lot personally. If I was building a team that I was trying to win a World Series or make a deep playoff run, I'd like that guy. He does things differently. But that sort of also hits on what the Mets are trying to do here. You know, they're trying to build some depth, and they're trying to give themselves a lot of options. Maybe a couple of these guys will hit in a major way, and they're trying to give some different looks out there and offer guys from their bullpen who are doing things a little bit differently, whether it's pitch repertoire or velocity or whatever it is. They want different looks out there, arm angle, you name it. They want to be different. They want their guys to be different, one through whatever. And, you know, a lot of the good teams will have at least one or two guys pop from their bullpen seemingly out of nowhere. We see that with all the successful teams year in, year out, whether it's the Astros or whoever, right? We suddenly look up, it's July, it's August, and we see somebody in their bullpen who has like these sparkling numbers. We've never heard of them before, or maybe we heard about them 5 years ago from the amateur draft and we never heard about them ever since. And suddenly they're fixed and it's great and whatever. That happens for the successful teams, right? And David Stearns actually has a pretty good track record of that occurring under his watch with Milwaukee and utilizing their resources and their pitching lab and all that stuff, which now the Mets have as well. So we'll see. It's easy to say that right now, but they need one of those guys to actually develop that way, right? That's what makes this something that is worthwhile as an endeavor. So we'll see. I don't necessarily, like I said, will bet on them getting somebody who's like a high caliber reliever, but it's definitely a possibility for sure.
John Danzo says, what are the odds the Mets land Justin Turner? Now, Justin Turner has been talked about, especially ever since Ronnie Mauricio went down. I know that I think it was Mike Puma who wrote that the Mets were kind of in talks with his camp. What are your thoughts on Justin Turner? Could there possibly be a reunion in Queens and Turner come back home, I guess?
Yeah, no, it's a good question. I think that Justin Turner is going to probably command a pretty good salary, actually. Even though he's on the older side, he has produced. Yeah. He has put up numbers, and he had a pretty impressive year last year as well. And so I expect him to get a pretty solid deal from somewhere. Whether it's the Mets, I'm not sure. That, like you mentioned, Anthony, that was a report from Mike Puma of the Post. That's not something that I've necessarily heard, but I have heard that they're looking for somebody who, you know, bats from the right side, who could help them a little bit at third base. And so maybe. But if it was me, I probably would expect him to go a little bit more defensive oriented, just based on what we've seen so far this offseason. And we talked about it at the beginning of our conversation tonight about just how they've sort of valued defense and they valued run prevention. So I would think maybe somebody a little bit more defensive oriented there, especially because, you know, yes, you have Joey Wendell perhaps, but if you're looking for a foil there who bats from the right side, you probably also want to continue to have some defense, because otherwise, you just fall into a category of, you have all these ground ball pitchers, or maybe not all these ground ball pitchers, but even Adrian Hauser is a high ground ball rate pitcher. You need defense. And that's something that we've talked about a little bit, but in the infield and in the outfield for the Mets, their numbers weren't that good. So I think that was an area where they wanted to improve, particularly at third base. So we'll see. We'll see about somebody like Turner. Wouldn't rule that out. Not saying it's like wrong or anything like that. But if it was me right now, I would probably suspect them to get somebody a little bit more defensive oriented, but could be wrong.
Yeah, I heard about, you know, how Hauser's a put it in play type of pitcher. And I said, oh boy, they are definitely going to have to get some more defense out there on the field. I would love Turner to come back just for the bat alone. But I know guys like Turner, guys like JD Martinez, who are, you know, getting up there in age, kind of fall in that range to me of the Scherzers and Verlanders over the world, where you're going to have to really overpay to bring them over here. And it might not be worth, you know, the 1 or 2 years of overpaying these guys and bringing them here, because I'm pretty sure, you know, a lot of them are on their last legs and kind of want to win, be in that process to win a championship. So the Mets would have to really overpay to bring in a guy like JD Martinez, or like you mentioned, Justin Turner.
Yeah, maybe sometimes. I think sometimes it depends on like what their market is looking like and like how many of their teams have made a play at them, because again, like they're advanced age, that hurts them a little bit. But we're talking about guys who have produced at the same time, and so to their credit, they should should command some dollars. But again, you know, one of these years, those numbers are not going to be what they are right now, right? Yep. And so you don't want to be on the wrong side of that at the same time. So there's definitely a delicate balance there for sure.
Yeah, speaking about like outbidding or overbidding, Rosie K says, seems like the Mets will have to significantly outbid other teams to land top tier free agents. Do you think that, you know, I think it comes with winning as well. If the team is winning, maybe these players are more willing to come over here and play like they are for the Dodgers and the Yankees?
Yeah, I'd agree with you. I don't think that they are in a special circumstance with having to like overbid necessarily. Like they're going to have to pay, sure. But we'll see. We'll see. We got to see who they target. We got to see how the season unfolds, I think, one. And then next year's free agent class is pretty solid. I think it's better, frankly, than this year's. And so we'll see if, like, you know, whoever they target as a starting pitcher, for instance, can they land that guy? I think that may be a better or a more fair test for them than, say, Yamamoto, because David Stearns just got this job like a couple months ago. Yeah. Like, there's a lot of things at play here. And I'm not saying it's David Stearns' fault or anything like that, but I'm just saying that it's there's a whole lot of newness around this club right now that they have to go through this and sort of prove it and keep proving it a little bit. So I don't know if they're in a special circumstance that way. When you're up against the Los Angeles Dodgers, yeah, you're probably going to have to probably pay more to lure somebody away from them. If they want to win and if they want to be part of that. So that's different. But if it's like, say, the Mets and whatever other random team, I don't know, they have to pay that much more. It just sort of depends. And I think that the thing with Yamamoto, at the end of the day, you know, he's a free agent who he was going to go to the place where he wanted to go. And the place where he wanted to go ended up being Los Angeles, because otherwise he could have gone anywhere else. But he is that special player that was able to dictate, okay, this is precisely where I want to go. And how am I going to get there at what dollar? And he got what he wanted.
Once again, I'm here with Will Salmon. He covers the Mets for The Athletic. If you're not following him, you should be. One of the better writers out there for the Mets right now. Appreciate the time that he's been giving me and also answering some of the questions in the chat. I want to get into this right now. And Carlos Ortiz is speaking what I've been thinking about over the last day. The first thing that I thought about was, could the Mets possibly now take the money that they were going to offer, and probably not all of it, but take some of that money now that they were going to offer Yamamoto and put that towards an extension this offseason for Pete Alonso?
It's an interesting thought. I think what sometimes with Steve Cohen and people thinking of him as like this, you know, magical owner who's going to spend an infinite amount of money, I think he's demonstrated that he's going to spend and he's going to pay for players or pay for things, whether they're resources for player development, whatever it is, he's going to pay the necessary cost, right? And it's not a situation of like, okay, well, you know, maybe if they don't do this, they'll do that. I don't know. I don't look at it necessarily like just because they didn't get Yamamoto, or you know, they could save some money and use it toward Pete Alonso. I think, and I have to do a lot more reporting on this before I feel 100% comfortable with this thought, but my thought is that they have an idea already of like what they want to do there, and they had that idea whether Yamamoto was signed or not. And I think that's part of like what you have to think about when you're in ownership and when you're part of the, you know, baseball operations, is what is like your vision for these types of players. Now, they're not going to probably share those because it doesn't help them and in leverage situations or anything like that, right? So we don't really know. But I'm sure that they have a working idea already, and they already had one. But we'll see. You know, with Pete Alonso, talks between players and agents and teams for extensions, they don't really get into gear until, you know, sometimes it happens in January, like we saw last year a little bit with Jeff McNeil, and we saw across baseball when like guys are finalizing arbitration dates and that kind of thing. But sometimes we don't see it until a little bit before spring training and into spring training, and then we see guys, you know, declare like, okay, I'm not talking about this because the season started. We see that every year, right? I'm sure that will happen on some teams, maybe the Mets, who knows. But for right now, it's one of those where we don't know, because it's just not that time of year yet. And I think maybe we'll start to learn a little bit more about Alonso's situation and what to expect maybe next month and into spring training for sure. But again, when somebody hires Scott Boras, the indication by all means is he's probably going to go to free agency. He's probably going to test the market. That's what history suggests. There have been some examples of that not being the case. But even if it does end up him going to free agency, that also doesn't rule the Mets out for re-signing him, right? So there's a lot still up in the air when it comes to Pete Alonso, and we're just not at the time of year where, you know, we even have shreds of information to make educated guesses, or, you know, we don't really have the reporting done to really think about exactly what where things are at right now with him.
You know, It doesn't seem like it used to, like back in the days where if the player didn't get his extension, he's like, I'm not going to talk about until free agency, that they would usually leave the team. You know, we didn't get that with Brandon Nimmo. He stayed here after, you know, testing the waters out in free agency. It kind of seems like more business than usual, than players taking it to heart where, you know, a team may not sign them. I assume that Alonso knew what the Mets were getting into this offseason with having to rebuild the rotation and you know, bring back get some pieces for the bullpen. So I would assume that he would give them every opportunity to bring him back, even if it does hit the free agency next offseason.
Well, you know, he hired Scott Boras for a reason, right? And that was before this winter, or right at the start of the winter, whatever it occurred. Hired him for a reason. Like he's trying to do his thing, and he's trying to get paid, and he's trying to get what he thinks he deserves in this market, just like how any of us would in our professions or our industries, whatever it is, right? That's good. That's what he should be doing. So yeah, I'm with you. I don't think it will be a sign of like, okay, then they're definitely not going to get him. We've already seen that that's not the case, where they could re-sign him. Question that's, I think, more interesting for me is, you know, how does David Stearns in this front office view him going forward? Because this is something that, you know, frankly, David Stearns has not had to encounter. He has not had a first baseman like this, where you have to judge somebody who brings elite power, but you have to say to yourself, okay, how is this guy going to age? Mm-hmm. How is this skill set going to age? Could we get that sort of power elsewhere? Or is it that valuable where we have to pay for him? How much do you factor into how important he is just in terms of the New York Mets culture and just him being a big fan favorite and what he's done for the city, that type of thing, what he could do for the city down the road, whatever the case is? That's the part to me that's most fascinating, because we have not seen David Stearns encounter those situations. And so that's what's most interesting to me.
This is going to be a big couple of years for Stearns. And, you know, his work has only gotten started, and hopefully he can figure out the solution to getting this Mets team to be a sustainable winner, whether that includes Pete Alonso or not, whether they, you know, hold on to them. And obviously I'm pretty sure that they will, if he does hit free agency and elects to go that route, I'm pretty sure the Mets will at some point this year be taking down what other teams are interested in, if they want to trade or not.
That would only be smart, right? That would only be prudent. You have to, if that's the case, right? And it depends on where you are in the standings, and there's other parts of that calculus that they'd have to consider. But yeah, it hurts probably the Mets fans' ears to even think of that and to hear those words. But yeah, that's just a prudent thing to do. You have to listen. And Ken Rosenthal, my colleague at The Athletic, reported that they listened even last year or last season at the deadline. And you have to, especially like when you're in a situation like the Mets, where you're trying to figure it out, you're trying to get pieces, you're trying to be that team that just beat you on Yamamoto. You're trying to be the Dodgers. And that requires a lot of hard decisions, and it requires some patience and some time, I think.
Going through a couple more comments before we wrap up here, Sleeping Forest says, I really want to take a flyer on Woodruff, which is Brandon Woodruff he was from Milwaukee, and now he's a free agent. Is this someone that, because he's going to be out all of next season, he's got injuries, is this someone you would pick up and kind of stash away and see if you can, you know, get anything out of him come the following season?
Well, my understanding with Woodruff is that there's a chance that maybe he pitches, but for the most part, 2024, you shouldn't really count on. Right. I think that's more or less his situation. But yeah, I think with the Mets, like, you should be in the market for those types of players, because theoretically, like, that's where you can flex your muscle a little bit financially. In and like give this guy a little bit more maybe. And, you know, we saw that with Luis Severino for that matter, right? Where like they paid a little bit higher for the 1 year because they liked him and they think that he could recapture some previous success and he's young enough where you could think along those lines. And so we saw that, and I see Woodruff in a little bit the same way where like, hey, flex your financial might here and try to go for him. I covered Brandon Woodruff in Milwaukee for a few years, and I don't know if I can name like more than, or you know, I can't really name that many pitchers who I'd rather have pitch for me actually. I think that highly of him. I think he's a great competitor. He's somebody you want in big games. I like him a lot. I think he has some really good years ahead of him actually. I'm no scout. I'm no, you know, I don't work in baseball operations, so whatever, take that for what it's worth. But you know, there's a lot to like there. So yes, I don't know if Woodruff would be interested in New York. He's from a small town in Mississippi, and maybe as a free agent he wants to go back to Milwaukee, or maybe he wants to go somewhere else. I don't know. But I also think if he were to go to New York, it wouldn't be an issue. I think that he has that personality and that clubhouse presence where he just fits in wherever he goes. I'm just not sure what exactly he wants. But you know, the Mets would be a good opportunity for him as well. Because they'd be able to pay him, and by all indications they have the resources to help guys like that get through it. And so that's an interesting one, and it's something where it's a risk reward situation with a nod toward 2025, when theoretically the Mets should be a little bit better even.
I don't know if we mentioned him earlier because all the other pitchers we mentioned, but what are your thoughts on Imanaga and the chances of the Mets kind of go? I haven't heard anything from the media about him. I don't know where they stand on him. If he's more of a guy that gets a Senga type deal, is that something that they're interested in, or like where they feel on Imanaga? That front's been kind of quiet, more than, you know, the Snells and the Jordan Montgomerys.
Yeah, and I think with Imanaga, even if he were to take a Senga type deal, we're talking 5 years, and that's a commitment, right? And like those are significant dollars too. It's not just like, yeah, you know, Kodai Senga, that's a good contract, and it's like it's looking good for the Mets because he finished second in the Rookie of the Year balloting last year. But you know, if he had some struggles, it hurts you a little bit, right? Like if he wasn't that good, then well, this is somebody that you paid a lot of money for and didn't pan out. So I think Imanaga, I expect him to command multi-years. And so it goes back to what I said earlier about if I'm guessing at this based on what my reporting has led me to think, I'm looking at 1 or 2 year deal type guys. And Imanaga is not that. He is not in that category. He's somebody that I would imagine gets a few years at least, and maybe 4 or 5 for that matter. I don't know. I haven't really plugged too deep into his market actually yet. But yeah, by all indications, he should fetch himself a decent enough contract, and I don't necessarily put him in the group that, again, based on what I've heard, based on my own reporting, that makes the most sense, that lines up with what I've heard for the Mets.
Before we wrap up here, what are your thoughts, like with all the reporting that you have done, what are your thoughts with the Mets, you know, kind of finishing this off season, and can they really compete? Because that's what everything was. I got the letter in the mail. I have my team membership for my tickets, and that was the thought. We'll compete in 24, see where we're at to go into 25. Where are you at with this team? You think that they can be competitive next season? I know we're not fully fleshed out as a roster yet, but you know, I am a little concerned with what I've seen so far. I don't hate the moves that they've made. I think that, you know, they've done their due diligence in some of the minor moves and the trade. But I don't know. We're at this moment in time if I think that this team is better than where they finished last season.
You sound a little dejected, Anthony. Almost.
And you know what? I try to be as optimistic as possible, especially on Twitter. You know, it's a little rough to navigate, especially when you're having a lot of conversations with Mets fans. But I, as honest as I can be, I don't know right now if I feel like this team is better than they were at the end of last season.
Yeah, I think that's a fair way to look at things right now. And you have to look at things critically. You know, it's not my job, frankly, to explain their moves in a way that, you know, makes anybody feel good. That's their job. I could do my reporting, and I can understand where they're coming from, and I could help fans and readers in that regard, but you know, it's not my job to say it's good or bad, or that their path right now is on pace, or it makes sense, or it's smart, or it's shrewd. I don't know. I mean, like we'll see. But I will say that, you know, being competitive in 2024, given the way that the playoffs are now, where it's a little bit easier to get in, it's kind of a low bar. Actually, like it's a lower bar than what it was. Like, you could make the playoffs, you could be competitive in the playoffs in that context and be a mid 80s team as far as wins go, right? Like, we saw that. Are they that much, will they be like come opening day, right? Will they be that much worse than what the Arizona Diamondbacks looked like, you know, at the beginning of the year? I don't know. We'll see. I do think that David Stearns has a track record of building out competent rosters that have exceeded preseason expectations. He made a habit of that in Milwaukee. He knows what he's doing from that standpoint. And so even if they don't make a splashy signing here in free agency or a splashy addition, you should feel some confidence based on his history as an executive, as somebody in charge of knowing what to do when it comes to this. And if he says that they're going to try to build a roster that's playoff worthy, I think you sort of have to look at his track record and make that judgment for yourself as far as, do you want to believe that or not? There's a lot of ways, and I think Steve Cohen alluded to this in his interview and article with Mike Puma of the Post, that you know, there's a lot of ways to get better as a team, and they are looking at those things. And even Yamamoto, like, does he give them, you know, five extra wins, or I don't know. Like, I don't know. Not that I wouldn't advocate for signing him, of course, right? But like, my point is that they need a lot more. They need other things, and we'll see. And they haven't really addressed some other issues as far as their lineup still needs a couple more guys, whether they're, you know, starters or whatever. They need some help there. And like we talked about, their bullpen and their starting rotation, it's just too early for me to say, like, yes, they did well this year or something like that. They haven't done enough yet.
Yeah, as much as I am iffy, I am confident, especially with the way the playoffs are formatted now, that, you know, the way that David Stearns will handle putting together this roster, it doesn't seem like they have to go crazy during a free agency like they would have in the past, where they had to overpay and are now still stuck with, you know, Scherzer and Verlander's contracts, which I think are done after this season. They're fully paid off. I don't know if I'm correct on that, but I think they are.
You have a little bit on Verlander still.
Still on Verlander?
Like a fraction of it, but, you know, that's the other part of it too, though, as far as like looking ahead. Like, I think when I did the math last, it's $100 million or so that comes off the books for them. That's huge. Whether your owner is Steve Cohen or whoever.
Like, and he was going to pay Yamamoto that money this year with all of that money on top of it. So,
yeah. So, I mean, it matters, though, that that's coming off, regardless of how rich their owner is. Like, that's a big deal. And I think when you couple that with the idea that free agency looks a little bit better anyway next year, you can kind of see where their vision lies, or like map it out. And again, not my job to say it makes sense, or it's good, or it's bad, or it sucks, or whatever. But you could understand, I think, where they're coming from if that's their logic.
Well, who knows even next year? Maybe, obviously, they probably didn't get the opportunity to match or, you know, supersede what the Dodgers had offered Yamamoto. And obviously, he wanted to play there. But maybe next season is the season where, you know what, maybe Cohen says, come back to me, I'll go an even extra mile for like a specific free agent. Maybe he does it next season. So, well, it's a lot to be seen, a lot to see what's going on. Carlos Ramos, I think, has it, I think, best here. 2024 is a transition year. Fans just have to accept it or drive themselves crazy. We'll see what happens with the Mets. But Will, I always appreciate the time you've given me. You've been on here with me before, and you've always been gracious to me, and I'm very thankful for that. Let everyone know what you're working on.
Yeah, of course, Anthony. Thanks again for having me on. I always appreciate chatting with you and the opportunity to talk. But yeah, you know, you can find me on X at Will Sammon, WILLSAMMON. And you can follow all of our coverage at theathletic.com. We have some gift subscriptions that you could utilize as well this time of year and latch on to some of those deals. But yeah, I always appreciate the readership, and I appreciate the opportunity to talk and to, you know, flesh some of these thoughts out with you, Anthony.
Yeah, for sure. And if you're listening or watching this right now, obviously you have to be following Will, because I'm always a big fan of your work, and I appreciate all the work that you've done covering the Mets. And I always tell everyone, if you're going to listen to someone someone, if you're going to read someone's work, you got to read Will Salmon's work. So Will, always a pleasure. I appreciate you coming on, man.
Thanks again for the kind words. Your check's in the mail for that. I appreciate it. But thanks, Anthony. Enjoy.
Yep. And we'll do it again.
Oh, for sure.
All right. Appreciate you, my friend. All right. That was Will Salmon of The Athletic. Does a great job covering the Mets. Make sure you are following him and his work at The Athletic, man. Great stuff that he does with the Mets. Like I always say, him, Jeff Passan, those are the two guys that I follow the most on here. You can follow me on X, Instagram, and TikTok at Subway to Shea. Listen and subscribe to the Subway to Shea podcast. I got that tongue twister. Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Turn on your notifications to never miss an episode of Subway to Shea. You can rate the show and leave comments for me to review. If you're watching this, you're probably subscribed to Subway to Shea, but if you're not, please do hit that subscribe button. Give me a couple of likes. Let me know what you think of the show. Leave comments, whether you like the show or not. I'm here for everyone's opinion. I'm always looking to improve, and it was great having Will on today. We were supposed to do a podcast on Tuesday, but with all the news surrounding Yamamoto getting signed, we kind of bumped it up to today, and I really appreciate everyone joining in. It was kind of an impromptu podcast. Usually I prepare a lot more, but it was a lot of off-the-cuff stuff for me. Guys, I just want to take the rest of this time, and that's to wish you all happy holidays. Got two episodes in this week. Had one with Mark Healy at the beginning of the week. Had this one with Will Salmon. I don't know what's happening next week. May have a little bit of a bonus episode, but do me a favor. Take some time away from the Mets. Take a break. Enjoy the holidays, because there's only so much as fans that we can control. Steve did his very best to try and bring in Yamamoto, and he just wanted to go to the Dodgers at the end of the day. That's just it. There's nothing we can do about that. The only thing that the Mets can do and Steve can do moving forward is do his best in making this place at Queens and making the Mets a destination to play for, to a point where we're not overpaying players to come here. There will be a point in time, hopefully, that we can get to where that is the case. Right now, it doesn't feel like that. It feels like we have to overpay. It feels like we keep losing. But at some point, the tide has to turn. And there's no one I trust more at this moment than David Stearns to fix that. And hopefully he will. We'll see what happens. But I hope and wish you all happy holidays. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in, for helping my podcast grow each and every week. Like I say every week, you've all been a major part of the success of Subway to Shea. It's not just me. It's all of us on here. All of us, a member of this Subway to Shea family. I appreciate you very, very much. And like I said, everyone, enjoy the holidays. Take a break from baseball. Enjoy your family and friends. This is Anthony Rivera for the Subway to Shea podcast. Always remember, let's go Mets.